Hello and welcome to everyone listening to the Written to Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring black girls who aren't all that nice, and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. And today, you guys, I am here with Brittany Morris. She is the best-selling author of Slay, The Cost of Knowing, Marvel's Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Wings of Fury, and The Jump. She also writes video games and has contributed to projects such as The Lost Legends of Redwall, Subnautica Below Zero, Spider-Man 2 for PS5, and Wolverine for PS5. Brittany is an NAACP Image Award nominee, an ALA Black Caucus Youth Literary Award winner, and an Ignite Award finalist. She has an economics degree from Boston University and spends her spare time reading, playing video games, and not doing enough yoga. She lives in Philadelphia with her husband Steven and their son Atlas, and I am so excited to have her on the show. Welcome to the Written to Melanin podcast, Brittany.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. So, we have all of your accolades on display in your bio, but also for our people who are just tuning in for the first time, have never met you, please let them know who you are in your own words.
Sure thing. It's going to be tough to follow that intro. What a beautiful intro. Thank you.
It was well written.
Hi, everyone. It's great to meet you. I've been writing books for about 5 years now as a published author and writing video games for a little less than that, about 4 years. I got my start in books and then transitioned into writing video games and books. I couldn't pick between them. I'm asked all the time, do I prefer writing books or video games? I love both equally. And yeah, I'm here to answer any questions you might have today about what it's like to write books or video games and some of the stories that I write. I first got into writing books when I was 9 years old, and I went through the querying trenches just like everyone else who has gotten traditionally published. I think I sent in 200 query letters before I got a yes on Slay. Wow. Yeah, it was a time. I learned a lot. And Slay was my very first novel that I got published, which is hilariously about a video game. So
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because honestly, I want to talk to you about all those things, because here on the podcast, you know, I like to talk about the journey of being an author, right? Because there are so many different ways and paths and experiences to that, right? And
absolutely.
The first thing I want to touch on is the fact that, okay, we're going to get to Slay in the book things, right? But we always talk about that. You are the first author that we have had on the podcast who actually does video games. So I'm really curious about that, because I am also a huge video game lover and an anime lover. And so I'm just like, those two things, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're really living the dream. So how did you cross over into writing video games? Like, how does one get into that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny how it happened. So At the time, I had written Slay and The Cost of Knowing, and for my third novel, Marvel actually reached out to my agent. I had written Slay after being inspired by watching the first Black Panther movie, and was like pretty public and vocal about where I drew my inspiration from. I saw the movie and then wrote Slay in 11 days. And then,
oh wow.
Yeah, it was I felt very inspired by that movie to create kind of a virtual Wakanda space and tell a story of a 17-year-old Black game developer who creates the game as like a safe space for herself and her community. So Marvel had heard of me. They knew that I was inspired by Black Panther and might be familiar with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Insomniac reached out to me and they were like, hey, so we heard you love like Marvel, and we heard you love video games, and we heard you can write action. Are you interested in writing a prequel book for the upcoming Miles Morales for PS4 game? And I could not say yes fast enough. Sat down with them, interviewed, got the gig, and sat down and wrote my first Spider-Man book. So it was a lot of fun. It was a big challenge. First and foremost, I knew I wanted to nail the voice. There is a difference between writing Peter Parker and writing Miles Morales. Of course, they're both Spider-Man. They both uphold the principles that Spider-Man, the character, holds dear, but they also have very, very different experiences as people. And so just making sure to get the voices right between the two of them, I think, made all the difference. Once they knew I could write the voices and the action and make it really, you know, action-packed and punchy and fun, I think they posted a writer job. And I was like, hey, so listen, I also can write a video game, I'm pretty sure. And by then I'd have two other video game projects under my belt. So the very first video game project I rolled onto was The Lost Legends of Redwall with Soma Games. I actually was on Twitter one day and saw a tweet go by that said something like, make sure to like declare your dreams to the universe and like, you know, manifest what you want out of life. And I was like, oh, this should be fun. I'll bite. So I quote tweeted it and I said, I would love to write for video games one day. And I posted it and I was like, this is going nowhere. Nobody's going to reply to this. This is not going to do anything. Like, really didn't have any expectations. And then suddenly in my DMs was somebody from Soma Games and they were like, hey, we're writing this game based on the Redwall books. Are you familiar and interested? So that was my first introduction into writing video games. And it was a great first project to transition from books because it was a choose-your-own-adventure game. So they asked for 25,000 words of prose, which was great because I'd never written a script in my life. And I sent in 25,000 words of prose, organized it into dialogue trees, and we launched the game. And then from there, I was introduced to people at Unknown Worlds, where I got to work on Subnautica Below Zero. And that was more of a blend between writing prose and writing individual dialogue lines that trigger under certain conditions. And then finally at Insomniac Games, that was where I started writing game scripts, which is a whole different format. There was a big learning curve on that.
I can imagine. That is, wow, that's a journey.
Yeah.
Like, and it's really cool to hear because it's just like, you know, people always talk about, you know, Twitter and Twitter pitches and stuff like that. But it's also kind of mind-blowing how a single tweet can really, like, change the trajectory of your entire, like, life and career in a lot of ways. I'm listening to it. I'm like, wow, okay. And I also love how, like, all of it kind of, like, coalesced at the right moment for you. So it was just like, you know, those video games helped you be ready for the Marvel ones that came later on down the road. Because, again, not only being able to, like, write the books for Miles Morales, but then also being able to like work on the game for Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine, like that's incredible. So flowers and claps and snaps and all the praise to you, man, because that's really cool. Like I have no other words. I think that's just really, really cool.
Thank you. It's so funny because I remember sitting there as a fan watching, you know, different playthroughs of the original Spider-Man and a whole bunch of other content that I thought was just me enjoying myself and wasting time, really. And all of that fed my knowledge. And when it came time for me to actually start a career in games, I had a lot of just background information that I wouldn't have got if I hadn't taken the time and done what I enjoyed. And so that really taught me that when you're having a good time and you're doing what you love, it's never a waste of time.
Agreed. And I feel like, especially when it comes to like writing books, because, you know, that's the world that I'm most familiar with, right? I feel like sometimes as writers, we kind of get focused on like what's popular and what people are picking up, what's trending, right? And you kind of want to write books that you're like, oh, well, people like this, so I should go with this. And it's just kind of like you have to remember to have fun with it and enjoy what you're doing, especially, like you said, if you're making a career of it, because the moment you make yourself miserable with it is the moment it becomes a job and not something that you are doing because you enjoy doing it, which is hopefully why most people get into writing. Because if you're listening to this, I'm gonna tell you right now, there's not a whole lot of money in writing unless you're super popular. So like, get into it because you love it.
Exactly. And like, I always tell, you know, people who are trying to figure out what to write and what the market wants, like, write what you love, write what you're passionate about, write what you care about, write what's important to you. And like, the market will meet you. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And that's fine.
Exactly.
Like, definitely write to feed yourself and not to feed the market.
Yes. Absolutely. And I also want to toss out that Ben put this in the chat. So slight plug, if you're listening to this and you want to listen to this in real time, join our Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and or description box wherever you're listening to this at. But he said that it's awesome how your passions arm you with the tools you can use for your career. And I feel like that's true of any position, any career, anything that you choose to do. If you are passionate about it and you take the route and the journey that you're supposed to take without trying to take shortcuts, like, you will have everything that you need, especially when it comes to writing, because those experiences really add up into making you a better writer, whether you realize that's what's happening in the moment or not.
Absolutely.
But that being said, I feel like you said, you mentioned something that we really need to expand on, and that's the fact that you wrote Slay in 11 days. Like, there are whole challenges out there of people trying to write a novel in a month, and people are like, okay, I gotta gear up, and they start preparing for it months in advance, and you're just like, yep, watch the movie, I am going to write this book now. Like, what was that experience like? And I know it had to be super intense.
Oh, yeah. I wish I could say it was easy. I wish I could say I could do it again. Neither of those are probably true. I saw Black Panther and I came home and looked up when the next Twitter pitch contest was. And I realized the next one was in 14 days. And I was like, oh, my God, if I'm going to the first person with a Black Panther comp, I've got to make this one. Because the very next one, everybody is going to be comping Black Panther. So I was like, well, here we go. And luckily at the time, like, I had a lot of privilege working for me to allow me to do that. I had a spouse who was able to kind of carry me as I, like, stayed at home and wrote these things. I didn't have any, like, small dependents or people who were, like, heavily dependent on me. I had access to public transportation so I could write on the way to work and on the way back. I had double monitors at my office so I could stay late and edit on one side while I was writing on the other, or have my outline on one side while I was writing on the other. There were a lot of tools I got to use that a lot of people aren't privy to, and I'm 100% acknowledging that. But yeah, basically the whole first day, I took 24 hours and wrote out an outline. I thought of all of the Slay cards for the duels in the game that are based on Black culture and Black history. I listed out, you know, everything that makes me proud and happy and excited to wake up Black in the morning. All of the different, you know, like, special moments that happen at cookouts and between me and my family and me and my Black friends, and just things that I've seen on Black Twitter, and just all the things that make us us, right? And I turned them into duel cards and put them in the book. Gave them different powers, thought of the gameplay map. I thought of a plot, had a handful of characters, and then as I wrote, they just kind of evolved and became their own personalities, especially through showing conflict with the main character. Once you put two characters in a room, they'll naturally start, you know, contrasting each other. And they kind of become their own people on the page right in front of you if you listen. So that's really how I did it in 11 days. And then I pulled together four beta readers, people who I've been very close with since, like, middle school, who are all very bookish people and know what they're talking about. And I was like, listen, I will pay you guys to read this draft in 2 days. And they all declined payment. They were like, we are not doing that. We will do this for you because we love you. And I sent them something anyway, but that's not the point. So my four close friends helped me and made it queryable. And then the very next day, I was querying several different agents. So it was a roller coaster.
It sounds like a roller coaster, but, you know, I'm really glad that you mentioned that it's like, A, it wasn't easy, you know, and that there were some, like you said, some privilege, some benefits that you had that made it possible. Because I feel like sometimes people forget that, like, everyone is at a different, like, their lives are different, right? And everybody has access to different things. And what works for one person isn't necessarily going to work for another. Because, you know, I've talked about it on the podcast before, but there is, you know, the popular writing advice to, like, write every day, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, cool. If that works for you, do it. But also acknowledge that being able to sit down and write every day at the same time for several hours uninterrupted is a privilege. Like, that's not something that everybody has. And like you said, being able to have a spouse who can help fill in the spaces and the gaps that you need while you're, like, full in, knee deep, neck deep in a project is also something where it's just like, that's how your life is set up. You know, it's a privilege.
Absolutely.
You know, so I'm glad that you touched on that, because if you are listening to this and you're like, hey, I want to write, but my life isn't like that. It's like, cool. But my suggestion, if I could talk correctly, is look at what you do have and make the most of that, because you may not write a book in 11 days. I can tell you this. I ain't never wrote a book in 11 days. I don't know how Brittany did it. Like, she's superhuman. That's a superpower. Do not hold yourself to that standard, right? Mm-hmm. Even 30 days. Give yourself as much time as you need and know that it's okay. Like, your timing is your timing. And that's why we call it a journey.
Absolutely.
That's why we call it an author journey.
In fact, I recommend people don't attempt to write a book in 11 days. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. I came down with the flu on day 12. Like, it was not kind to my body. So absolutely take the time that it takes.
All the things you said that you created, I'm like, so you just casually dropped that, like, oh yeah, I created an entire fantasy world with dueling cards, an entire play system with multiple characters. And by the way, we're going to have it sound cohesive. And I just did it in 11 days. Like, whatever, it's fine. It's cool. Like, okay. And I guess that is also like my next question, because, you know, you did go traditional publishing route, right? And so the idea, right, from the outside is that, you know, once you have an agent and your book is out there and you're on, I guess, on contract, right? It kind of comes with this expectation that you now have to write on deadline. You know, so how did you go from, okay, I wrote a book in 11 days to, okay, now I have to do this again, but now I have to do it in such a way where it's like, I have more time, but also I'm on a deadline and this is different. Like, how did that work? But I guess it's not that different, because you did it before on deadline. It was just a self-imposed deadline.
So with Slay, it was a self-imposed deadline and the tightest deadline I have ever had and or met. But thereafter, it was a little bit tricky, because like, the difficulty for me really depends on how much material the publisher already has and has been sold on. So if you sell on what's called spec and you just have an idea that you share with your publisher and they're like, okay, great, we'll buy that book. Here's your, you know, sign-on bonus. Now deliver. Then you've got a basic concept at the core of your book, and you can really just play around with the rest of it, with character names and with, you know, character arcs and romances and world building. All of that is kind of, you know, up to you from thereafter. And as long as it works, your publisher should be happy. If you've sold based on like a sample or even a full manuscript, then it can be kind of trickier, because there's a greater chance that your publisher bought the book based on some core elements that really aren't all that movable. And for me, like, the more pillars that are already in place and set in stone, the harder it is to go back and rework a book that's already been kind of solidified. But when it comes to actually meeting a deadline and like sitting down in the writer's chair when, you know, maybe you've had a bad day and you're tired and you're hungry and you didn't sleep well the night before and you have to be inspired to write a big chunk of the book because there's a looming deadline in the next, you know, couple of weeks, that can be really, really hard. But NaNoWriMo taught me a whole lot about just getting things on the page, right? It doesn't have to be good. It doesn't have to be, you know, immaculate. It doesn't have to sing. It doesn't even have to really work. But as long as it's on the page, it's editable. And if it's editable, then it's turn-in-able for a few rounds at least, and that'll buy you some time. If you're working on the final round, then usually you're in copy edits and there's not a whole lot of changes to be done anyway. That's usually how I get by with deadlines.
Gotcha. I think you're the first person to kind of like talk about how that really works as far as like being on spec or, you know, selling a whole manuscript, because again, those are phrases that people kind of throw out, and I'll say in the Twitterverse, because honestly, I feel like Twitter is a place where a lot of authors really talk like about what's happening in real time. I don't know if it's still like that, because obviously it kind of imploded at one point, but neither here nor there at this point. So if you're listening to this, or if anyone is listening to this, like kind of trying to concisely say what you just said to make sure I understand for my own benefit, right? Being on spec is like the idea, right? And then versus I guess you can also sell like a partial manuscript. Like, I've never heard that before. That was new information.
Absolutely, you can.
Very cool. Very cool. So, that being said, what was it like for you with the cost of knowing and the jump? How did your process go with that? But also, I kind of want to talk about the fact that all of your books do not shy away from being diverse or touching on social justice. Like, you go full on with everything, and I kind of respect you for it. And by kind of, I mean, like, you do not shy away from it, and I appreciate that. So I also want to touch on that a little bit too. So, but first, question number one, what was the process like for the cost of knowing and the jump? So was that, trying to use my fancy new terms, was that on spec or did you sell the whole manuscript? Ooh, look at me, sounding fancy.
Oh man. Okay. So those were two like such different experiences, and I'll tell you why. So when I sold Slay, I sold a 2-book deal. So my publisher bought Slay and then whatever else was coming up next, which ended up being The Cost of Knowing. At the time that it was bought, I didn't have a title, I didn't have characters, I didn't have a plot, I didn't have anything that I had sent to them. They just knew it was going to be another young adult contemporary, which gave me a lot of freedom to like brainstorm before we actually sent over the idea and the concept. And at the time when we sent it over to them, we basically just said, you know, it's about 2 teenage boys. One can see into the future, one can see into the past, they're brothers, and everything changes when one brother sees a vision of his younger brother dying in the next few days. And so it becomes a race against time to get to the bottom of this 400-year-old family curse and figure out what it means to be a joyful black boy in the present. And they were like, yep, absolutely. Now go deliver. So I went and sat down and I, you know, thought about all of the different things that all of the different ways that like mental illness and blackness can intersect uniquely for us, and what a tall order it is to ask black men living in today's society to be joyful despite everything that they have to go through and everything that society expects of them from a very from birth, really. And you know, just heaped all of these different like hard things on my main character Alex. Then I turned it in, my publisher loved it, and they said, okay, now it's time to go and edit. And when I went back to edit, I was pregnant with my son and had just found out he was a boy. So now I'm going back and looking at all of these, you know, grueling things that I've put this character through and realizing, like, I'm about to bring a young black boy into the world. And so editing was just such an emotional experience, and, like, just, it's different when you're observing from an outside perspective, but when you're realizing you're going to have to guide somebody through life that could look like this, it was eye-opening, and it made the book way more real for me personally. The jump, on the other hand, was an entirely new book deal. So that was what we call an option book. So once you've written all the books in your contract, then your publisher might have asked for an option, which is the next book that you're working on, they get to look at it first. So if they look at it and they like it, then they might buy it. They might buy it in a multi-book deal, which is what happened to me. So we sold The Jump and whatever my next young adult contemporary is, which I'm working on now. It is drafted and I'm now editing. So that's fun. So with The Jump, that was really a return to, like, I want to have fun again. Like, I want to write a book about kids having fun. Like, that was kind of what I wanted to do. And so that one is about 4 kids in Seattle solving puzzles digital clues. They take on a citywide scavenger hunt posted under very mysterious circumstances in the hopes of taking down an oil refinery that is threatening to gentrify their neighborhood. So it is extremely action-packed, extremely high octane. It is National Treasure if you swap out Nicolas Cage with 4 diverse teens in Seattle.
That is definitely one way to pitch it. It sounds very cool. Like, all of your books, I love that you have a very, like, when you talk about it, you have a very strong and clear idea of, like, what this book is and who it's for. And especially with, you know, The Cost of Knowing and hearing your personal experience with it, it kind of, I don't know, as a writer, it kind of opens up my own perspective, where it's just like, oh, some books hit differently. And it's just like, that's the nature of being alive and being creative and, you know, writing things that have to exist in a world that is far from perfect.
Absolutely.
You know, especially as a Black person writing Black characters, that comes with a different level of emotion and I'll even say responsibility to a certain extent, because it's just kind of like that age-old adage is like, you know, for better or for worse, for a lot of us, we are the representation for a lot of people, right? Like, they look at us and see we represent everybody, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just kind of like the fact that you took that and you looked at it and you were like, okay, it's not just for them, it's for us in a very personal way.
Absolutely. You know? And I mean, I love, like, I love writing about like hard to tackle topics, because usually my books start with a question at the center, and that's where I come up with a lot of my book ideas. And usually those questions have a 50,000 plus word answer, right? Like, the hard topics are the ones that need an entire novel to kind of explore and look at from different angles and see from different perspectives. And when you look at a topic like gentrification and, like, you know, the general horrors of capitalism, it needs a four POV, like four different perspectives to really do it justice. And so that's what I tried to do with The Jump. Jax, Yaz, Han, and Spider are all from very different backgrounds. They're all working class, so their parents are all very firmly in the middle of the US economy. And they're slowly being boxed out with their careers, with their homes, with their neighborhoods, with what they hold dear and their family values. And, you know, even bringing in, there's the Duwamish tribe in The Jump, which is a real tribe in Seattle, who are caretakers of the Duwamish Riverway, bringing in their perspective on environmentalism and, you know, the otherwise labeled scourge of humanity upon the earth. And what are their opinions and history about the earth that they hold so dear, and their neighborhoods and what it means to them on a spiritual level. And just, I really tried to look at that from so many different perspectives. And that's kind of my hope, is that my readers will put down my book and just see a different way of thinking about things and a different way of looking at things that they might not have considered before. Because that's generally my favorite thing when I put down a book. If I leave a book feeling like I've seen something new or thought about something in a different way, it's a good time.
I feel that 100%, because that's one of the things that I have been looking for a lot more in my books this year, is just something that is new, something that isn't, okay, I've been presented this idea the same way 100 times before, you know, and it's just, this is entry number 101. Like, I want something that's going to present me something different, where I can, it's going to be new, make me feel like, oh, I haven't experienced this before. I haven't thought like this before. I haven't read this before.
Absolutely. You
know? So it's nice to hear that that's what you are striving for in your own writing. So that also tempts me to ask, like, can you tell us anything about your next upcoming project?
Yeah, I think I can. I can safely say it is looking like a young adult cross between Mamma Mia and The Godfather.
Those are not two things that I would have ever put together in the same comp.
Yep. It is a monstrosity of a plot, and I'm loving every minute of it.
That sounds wild. I'm trying to imagine, like, what parts of Mamma Mia are you taking? And what parts of The Godfather are you taking?
There's family drama. There's family drama everywhere. There's also like a lighthearted overtone to one of the POVs. And then the other POV character is like very much in the trenches of like intergenerational trauma and like breaking cycles and living with a narcissist. And so it's very, very polarized in terms of tone between the two characters. So it's been a lot of fun to work on.
I can imagine. And like we said at the beginning of this, you have to have fun with it. So I'm glad that you are. But that being said, we are getting to that sweet spot of the podcast. So I do have one very specific question that I want to ask you, but I also want to open this up. So if there's anyone listening in the backstage who would like to ask their own questions, now is your time to drop it so we can ask it before the podcast wraps. But that being said, while we are waiting for them to drop their questions, Brittany, If you could give one piece of writing advice to a new author who is just now starting out on their writing journey, what would that piece of advice be?
Ooh, okay. So I'm going to cheat a little bit on this one and give two pieces of advice that are going to sound like contradictions, but I promise they're not. The first is to go for it. If you are sitting in front of a manuscript and you are thinking that you're not ready to write it, or you're not ready for it to be queried, or you're not ready to, you know, go out and meet people or go to a convention and, you know, put your feelers out there and jump into the community, I'm here to tell you, you are 100% ready. Just do it. There is no such thing as I'm too young, or I'm too inexperienced, or I haven't written enough, or my work isn't good enough. Get in here. And second is to be patient with yourself. So even if you, you know, jump in and you query and you do what I did and you wrote a book, you write a book in 11 days and you send out a mass of queries, it can still take a long time for publishing to meet your speed. Even if you are going fast and running at full speed, publishing very rarely is. Whether you're traditionally publishing or self-publishing, it can take a while. 100%, if you're at the other end of the spectrum and you're like, I've been doing this for decades, you know, it's just not working for me. There's such this warped mentality in publishing that once you're above a certain age, you're no longer a young author, which is ridiculous. Or, you know, it's too late for you, or you've been at this too long and it's just not going to work for you. Absolutely be patient with yourself. There's no such thing as starting too late. That's my polarizing advice.
You know, I honestly don't even think it's polarizing. I think it's extremely sound, because it's like, one, you have to give yourself grace. Like, everybody has a journey, and that's one thing that I'm really big about on this podcast. And whenever I talk to anyone for like coaching, or if I'm just on the internet and we happen to cross paths, I'm always like, writing is a journey. It's an author journey, and the path that you take is unique to you. And kind of like we said at the beginning of this episode, it's like everything that you experience, everything that you go through, it's going to add into your story. It's going to add into your writing. It's going to help make it better. There is no such thing as wasted time, because even if you're not picking up a pen, you know, if you're out living life, guess what? You're meeting people. Those are going to become the characters that you write. You're seeing places, you're experiencing things. Those are the things that you're going to pull from when you do sit down to actually write your stories. Everything adds up. So give yourself grace, but then also, like you said, you know, don't be afraid to take that first step, right? There's a difference between giving yourself grace and being like, okay, I want to do X, Y, and Z first, and then being too scared to make a move when you know that you are at a point where it's time to move forward. It's time to take the plunge, right? No one's ever ready to jump 2 feet first into the deep end,
exactly.
Right? It's always scary. But you still have to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
If not you, then who?
Right. And then also there's the viral advice, there's this clip. I don't know if everyone has seen it, but I have seen it multiple times, of Leslie Jones. She's on some talk show. I don't know. I'm not even pretending to know what it is. But she's talking about how, you know, she's talking about Oprah or whatever. And she's like, you know, Oprah got fired from her first job. And they're like, and the people are like, oh man, can you imagine firing Oprah? And she's like, no, you know, she needed that experience to become Oprah at the time. You know, she wasn't ready for that position. It wasn't where she needed to be,
yeah.
Right? So I always think about that, especially with what you just said. It's just like, yeah, sometimes the thing that doesn't work out, it's not supposed to work out, because it's opening the door and preparing you for something else later down the line. Every opportunity isn't the opportunity that we think it
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can't name names, but I can bring up, like, I can count on two hands the number of different opportunities that I thought I was missing out on in the past that ended up being a dodged bullet. So it happens.
Let's talk about it. Sometimes you're dodging a bullet and then you don't even know it. Don't even know it. But that being said, we have one more question, and then I'm going to take us out. And that comes from Ben, who is backstage, and he asks, where do you find the perseverance to push forward through your author journey? And I think that's a really good question, because like you said, sometimes you have to take the plunge, and sometimes opportunities, like you said, you can count how many you really thought were you for you in that moment. So how do you persevere through those moments when you're like, man, I really wanted that?
That is such a great question. And I mean, like, it's so easy to come on here and just give like a general platitude and just say, oh, just remember that more opportunities are on the way. And just remember that when one door closes, another one opens, or a window opens, or whatever the phrase is. But really, like, that is such a hard thing to hear if you're in the middle of it, right? And so I think the best thing you can do, at least I should talk about this from my perspective. The best thing I can do when I really just feel so burnt out, so tired, so hopeless, so, you know, I really don't want to do this, is just to like allow myself time and space to wallow in it for a little while, like however much time I can spare. You know, get outside, walk around, really just sit with like, oh man, I really don't want to do this. And like, feel those feelings, right? And once that happens, it can be a lot easier to let go of it when the time comes. Like, I will 100% lean into the, I really don't feel like writing right now, and just take a day or two or a week if I can spare it, and pour into other things, get back into yoga, which I don't do enough of, watch a movie, hate watch a movie, something that, you know, gives you spoons back, that gives you energy back, that feeds you. Go and hit up those friends that you haven't talked to in months or years. Fly somewhere if you can spare it. Just do other things, look at other things, and sometimes that helps when the time comes and you need to get back in the writing chair.
I second all of that, because the thing is, if you are in an author journey, whether that be traditional, indie, self-published, whatever you want to call it, if you're on an author journey, there are going to be moments that are disappointing, and they are going to hurt. So I second what Brittany said. Give yourself space and time to feel what you are feeling, because we like healthy, happy, mentally sound adults.
Yes, we do. Right?
People, because you might not be an adult, right? Feel your feelings. Don't bottle it up, right? And then also, I think in my own words, I would say give yourself perspective. Remember that your author journey is just one part of your life, you know? And like Brittany said, I don't want to say touch grass, but like... for lack of a better term, touch grass. Like, you know, talk to your friends, talk to your family, have a nice meal, you know, relax. Remember that there are other things in your life that you enjoy, whether that be video games or TV or movies or board games or knitting or whatever else that sustains you as a full person, even if that's just reading instead of creating books, right? Like, allow yourself time to feel what you feel. Put your life back in perspective, that this is just one moment, one opportunity for one aspect of your life. And then you breathe, and then you get back to it. You know, we move, as they say. I don't know why. Okay, side note, completely unrelated to anything that we have been talking about. There's this guy who does TikToks. His name is Jordan. I'm pretty sure we've all seen Jordan at some point. He talks on his mirror, right? And I don't know what video he said, but he was talking about something. He was like, but, you know, we move. And the way he said it has been living in my brain rent free. And I don't even know if it's like a cultural thing or just something he said at one point. I don't even know. It just
it definitely lives in my head.
And I needed you guys to know that.
If it's not a cultural thing, I nominate it.
Right. So Keep moving forward. There will definitely be another opportunity. And just remember that, you know, if you stop, you're never going to get where you're going.
Absolutely. So, well said.
Thank y'all. I try. You know, it comes in bursts. But that being said, if you could let the people know where to find you on the interwebs, if they would like to keep up, and then that is basically it for this podcast.
Absolutely. I am on Twitter and Instagram sparingly at handle Brittany M. Morris, and I am on authorbrittanymorris.com. You can reach me via the form on there at authorbrittanymorris.com/contact.
All right, you guys, there you have it. You know that there will be a link to all the things in the show notes and or description box, depending on where you were listening to this at. And yeah, that is it for this episode of the Written in Melanin podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone that you think may enjoy it. Join the Patreon at patreon.com/writteninmelanin or grab a copy of my books from my website, cmlockhart.com. There are links in the show notes for everything. And thank you guys again so much for listening. Until next time, I hope all your books are full of melanin.